From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. After nearly 2 years of investigations, the Special Counsel's Office, headed by Robert Mueller III, is finally closing down. Mr. Mueller's final report, which was so heavily anticipated by so many, was submitted to the Attorney General's office as per the special counsel's regulation, with no new indictments announced. Within hours, Attorney General William Barr, who has only been in his position for a few weeks, sent a four-page summary of the Mueller report to Congress. According to Barr's summary, Mueller concluded that there was no collusion with Russia in the 2016 election and made no determination one way or another of whether the president attempted to obstruct justice. In fact, Barr quoted the actual Mueller report on the issue of obstruction of justice. While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Trump has proclaimed that the report completely exonerates him. News reports are touting the end of the probe as a victory for Trump and as a damper on prospects for impeachment. But Democrats are demanding that the entire Mueller report be made public. More than a dozen state attorneys general have also made such a demand. We turn to Ron Fine, legal director of the group Free Speech for People. He's a constitutional lawyer who previously served as assistant regional counsel in the U.S. EPA, and he's the co-author with John Bonifaz and Ben Clements of the book The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. Welcome, Ron.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you.
So you and I have talked several times since your book came out about the Mueller investigation and about the general case for Trump's impeachment. And there's some overlap between the two. But first, let's just focus on the Mueller report. This was hugely anticipated. Many people, including people on the left, felt that this would be the final thing that would undo this train wreck of a presidency. Were you surprised by what some have deemed as the nothing burger that Mueller served up?
Well, I think it's important to remember a few things. One is we don't actually have the Mueller report right now. What we have is a four-page summary from Attorney General Barr, who, if you remember, was chosen by Donald Trump after he sent an unsolicited letter to Trump's legal team arguing that the president couldn't possibly commit obstruction of justice under the law. So, in other words, Trump handpicked the attorney general to help him in this process, and it's quite possible that Barr's summary of the Mueller report is not a fair summary. And until we see the Mueller report itself, we won't really know what Special Counsel Mueller is saying as opposed to what Attorney General Barr is saying. But a second point is that criminal prosecution is different from impeachment. And a perfect example was presented in the Barr letter, which is that obstruction of justice under criminal statutes requires prosecutors to prove that the defendant obstructed a proceeding. And that term is found in the statutes. And courts have disagreed over what exactly counts as a proceeding. And we actually wrote about this, anticipated this in our book, in the chapter on obstruction of justice, that prosecutors might well get tied up in knots over the question of what exactly counts as a proceeding. And in Barr's letter, what he says is that they couldn't find a significant nexus between obstructive conduct that Trump committed and a pending or contemplated proceeding. So for criminal prosecution purposes, that may be very important. For impeachment purposes, obstruction of justice is a form of abuse of power, and Congress doesn't need to turn on those narrow statutory questions. But the final thing I'll say is that the case for impeachment has always been much broader than just the two issues that are the scope of Mueller's investigation. We launched this impeachment campaign on Inauguration Day, focused on the president's violation of the constitutional prohibition on taking money from foreign governments. That continues today. That wasn't part of the Mueller investigation, and it has always justified impeachment and continues to do so.
Now, there seem to be sort of two aspects that are raised around the Mueller investigation. One is whether there was indeed some kind of collusion, and there have been various hints towards it. Clearly, Trump wanted to impress Vladimir Putin. We heard Michael Cohen's testimony around the Moscow Tower meeting and what Donald Trump Jr. knew, et cetera. And then there's the issue of Trump trying to squash the actual investigation itself, you know, which people point to the fire of James Comey, the attempts to pressure Rod Rosenstein, the anger over Jeff Sessions' recusal, and then the ultimate firing of Jeff Sessions, etc. So those are these sort of two main threads that have emerged from the Mueller investigation. And it seems strange that on both those broad threads, the Mueller investigation would turn up nothing whatsoever. You know, I imagine that Mr. Mueller and his team know if Barr is unfairly summarizing his report. And I wonder if they would speak out if need be.
Well, the best way to find that out is to get the full text of the report. There may be, you know, some small amounts of information that's classified and needs to be redacted, but we need to be seeing the vast majority of that report. And members of Congress with clearances of both parties should be able to see every word and every footnote of it. But the bigger issue is, again, that Mueller was operating under a mandate that was very narrow, and the standards for criminal prosecution are quite different from the broader pictures that we're talking about. I mean, we know there's no dispute that members of the Trump campaign, and in some cases Trump himself, openly welcomed election assistance from Russian operatives, people who they knew to be associated with Russian intelligence. And we know, because most of it took place in public, that Trump has constantly tried to shut down the investigations into him. Now, whether or not that meets the legal definition of obstruction of justice under criminal statute regarding a proceeding, it's a gross abuse of power, and we saw it playing out in real time. So I don't think it's fair to say, and we'll know for sure once we've seen the full Mueller report, that Mueller didn't find, you know, any evidence of any violations. And in fact, with obstruction, what he seems to have done is laid out the evidence without drawing a conclusion. And interestingly, that's exactly what happened in 1974 with the Nixon special prosecutor. The Watergate special prosecutor didn't draw a conclusion on obstruction of justice. He just sent the facts over to Congress, to the House Judiciary Committee, to decide whether or not they merited impeachment, and he left it to Congress to decide. That may be what Mueller has done here, and Attorney General Barr may have taken it upon himself to insert himself and make a conclusion that no one was asking him to make.
Now, he did quote the Mueller report in his four-page summary. In fact, we don't see much of the Mueller report at all, but he gave us this one tidbit from Mueller on obstruction. Mueller wrote, "While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him." Now, there's also the issue of what Trump thinks should be made public, because when asked whether he supported the report being made public, he seemed very confident. He should not have had the chance to see it yet, right? This is only for the eyes of the Attorney General so far, and his staff, I assume. But Trump feels apparently so confident that he said, "Oh, that's up to the Attorney General. I don't mind if he releases the whole thing." But we've heard that Trump's lawyer, Jay Sekulow, doesn't want Trump's answers to Mueller's questions that were given in writing to be released. I don't know if those answers form part of the actual report or not. So do you think that Trump is mistaken in his confidence about the Mueller report?
Well, we won't know for sure until we've seen it, but what we can speculate is that the report contains a lot of damning information about Trump. And wherever Mueller may have found that he couldn't quite cross the line that made him ready to bring a criminal prosecution, that doesn't mean, as the partial quotation says, that Trump is exonerated. And it's likely that it contains substantially damaging information to Trump, information that might be very interesting to Congress and the American public, even if Mueller decided he wasn't ready to prosecute crimes.
So let's talk about what the right is of the Democrats now and what means they could use to release the Mueller report. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer wrote a letter calling into question William Barr's allegiance to the actual Department of Justice and pointing out that he seemed biased toward Trump, and calling for the report to be released. Attorneys General that I mentioned, New York's Attorney General, especially Letitia James, has taken the lead in this. She and about a dozen and a half other attorneys general have signed a letter calling for the report to be released. How could the Democrats force the release of this report? What legal means do they have?
Well, they can certainly issue a subpoena, and then the Department of Justice can decide whether it's going to contest that subpoena. Again, we've seen this before in the Nixon proceedings. The House Judiciary Committee had a tremendous amount of difficulty getting through the layers that the Department of Justice was putting up when they wanted to get the material from the Watergate special prosecutor. The subpoena fights that happened in that case actually ended up becoming an article of impeachment against Nixon themselves. But I think that the first step should be to call for the Department of Justice to voluntarily provide this information. And then if they don't, then move to the subpoena step, and then we'll see if that turns into a further legal fight.
So let's talk about some of the other things that came out of the Mueller investigation. I mean, it was not just the Mueller investigation's narrow focus that has opened a can of worms for Trump. It's all of the other things that investigation spawned. We did have 37 indictments, right? There were six people, I understand, that were faced charges, some of whom are already serving prison time or will be very soon serving prison time. You have folks like Michael Flynn and Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen. And specifically from Michael Cohen, who is Trump's former personal attorney, we saw the only sort of public testimony of the kinds of things that Trump was up to. Specifically, we saw the issue of potential campaign finance problems and violations with the checks that Trump was writing to Michael Cohen to pay him back for the hush money payments made before the election. But those checks were written while Trump was in office. What do you think is going to come from all of the other things that the Mueller probe spawned?
Yeah, we know that the Mueller probe did spawn quite a few of these. So some investigations were handed off to other units within the Department of Justice, such as the Southern District of New York. We also know that for quite a while they've been sharing information with the New York Attorney General. So the fact that Mueller is done does not mean that Trump and his associates are out of trouble. And in fact, Trump has tended to surround himself with some rather corrupt people who have a whole range of legal problems that don't even involve Trump necessarily, like Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen. And I think we can expect to see that there'll be more inquiry into Trump's business dealings and investments and loans and structured transactions and sort of financial arrangements that may have been illegal or problematic in other respects. So I don't think we're going to see the end of this. And it's important for people to not take as if the Mueller probe, which is just one part of a multifaceted set of investigations across Congress, other parts of the Department of Justice, New York Attorney General, other state attorneys general. There's a lot going on, and there are going to be a lot more investigations.
Do you think too many people put too much faith in specifically the Mueller investigation and the final report?
I think a lot of people did. And I think that the leaders of the parties in Congress really encouraged that. And of course, every time we've spoken, Sonali, I've always tried to emphasize the range of impeachable offenses that aren't even part of the Mueller investigation. But there has been a certain tendency to focus on those and expect that he would be a savior who would come in and sweep in. And a lot of that was an effort, I think, to deflect discussion of impeachable abuses of power in the hope that a prosecutor could do the hard political work. work. But that obviously is not the way it looks like things are playing out. And what that means is that that hard political work is going to need to happen, and it needs to be led by the people.
Let's also talk about how the impeachment proceedings from Congress might actually move. Earlier this year, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, much to the chagrin, I think, of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, launched impeachment proceedings. She has made a big deal of this. This is one of her issues. She's, you know, only been in office for a few months. I'm wondering what you impact, if any, or what bearing, if any, the release of the Mueller report, or I should say the issuing of the Mueller report to the Attorney General, will have.
Well, this is the way I would like to think about it. Imagine that you had a hypothetical president who had not been the beneficiary of assistance from a foreign power and had not tried to shut down investigations, but the following things did happen, that he was on the take from foreign governments through his businesses, that he was using federal taxpayer dollars to enrich himself through his businesses, that he was directing federal agencies to target and harass his political opponents, that he was calling the press the enemy of the people and trying to use the powers of government to shut down unfavorable media criticism, that he was deploying the army to the border for naked political purposes, and declaring a fake emergency, all the while calling his critics traitors and saying that criticism of him is treason. I think if we had a case like that, which is, of course, exactly what we have with Donald Trump, when you take away the Mueller report, that that would be a ground for impeachment hearings. And I hope that the House will move soon to start that inquiry into those issues.
Ron, just staying on the special counsel's investigation for a minute longer, this investigation cost, you know, millions of dollars, like $25 million, et cetera, ate up a lot of attention. And one wonders if the special counsel, which is essentially the result of regulations that were put into place years ago, cannot indict a president like Trump, a completely, you know, unprecedented presidency like Trump's. What is the point? What teeth does the special counsel have if somebody who has been so abusive of this office that, you know, we couldn't even imagine such a president more than 2 years ago, if the special counsel cannot ensnare or call out or have any kind of real impact on a president like Trump, anybody could be president and seemingly do anything, and the special counsel regulations would not, it seems, be able to do much about it.
That is the danger, and I think that Congress is the only body that can stop that, because right now, not only looking, of course, at what you just pointed out, all the things that the special counsel has investigated, but everything else. If Congress doesn't act to draw a line in the sand and say these are worthy of an impeachment investigation, then it sends the message, not just to Trump, but to future presidents, that they can get away with all of this as long as they have the support of their base and, you know, and enough members of Congress, they can get away with anything at all. And so we need to draw a line in the sand, not just to deal with Trump, but to deal with a future authoritarian president, maybe one who's more competent and more efficient and focused than Trump. And if we don't do that, then we're setting the precedent that anything goes.
What about the anything that comes out of these investigations after Trump leaves office? Say he loses re-election in 2020, which is optimistic, but say he does. Once he is no longer sitting president, does anything that came from the Mueller investigation, whether, you know, actually directly a part of it, or if we ever see the report, or some of the other side investigations, could Trump ever be held accountable for many of the things that he seems to have been responsible for once he's not in office?
He could. And it's important here, I think, to divide two things. One is holding him accountable for what he's already done. And of course, criminal prosecution can do that, including, for example, the Southern District of New York, which may be investigating his financial dealings and hush money campaign finance violations. Of course, the New York Attorney General has jurisdiction over a lot of his business dealings. That's an important part of it. The other point I want to make, though, is that the purpose of impeachment is not to punish the president for what he's done, but to protect the society from what he might do. Mm-hmm. So if we're worried about what Trump might do during his remaining term in office, that's something that Congress can step in to act on. Punishment after the fact can be left to prosecutors, but to protect the society itself, we need an impeachment investigation.
And also, Ron, perception is everything, right? I mean, Trump has basically been first worried that the special counsel investigations would indict him or trap him in some big way. But once he realized that the narrow focus and at least Barr's interpretation of Mueller's narrowly focused investigation report does not have a glaring smoking gun, he has run with it, spun it as complete and total exoneration, as he tweeted, which of course is something that his base is now going to be triumphantly pushing in everyone's faces. And it seems as though if Trump was holding back at all over the last 2 years, that he will be completely and fully and utterly unleashed now, as if that was would even be possible, but apparently it might be. So how important is this perception of what the Mueller report is? And does that go back to that question of, well, we do need to see the actual report?
We do, and I think you're exactly right that the perception management is something that has been key here. And, you know, Trump, so many of Trump's advisors and appointees are so incompetent at their jobs that it may be a surprise to see that Barr is good at what he's doing. And what I think he's done is he's taken a Mueller report that most likely, we'll know when we see it, but most likely has substantial damaging information against the president. And yet by holding that back for a while and writing this four-page summary that nobody really asked for, he's managed to depict it in the media as an exoneration for Trump. And that's defining the story. And when we get the full text of the report, if you know Barr can slow roll that, it comes out after a while, people will shrug their shoulders is the danger and say like, well, we already knew that was coming. And by depicting the Mueller report, by painting it, interpreting it with this very short summary that has a noticeable spin to it, it may well be that Barr has managed to give Trump that perceptual boost that you spoke about. And I think that's a real danger that we need to confront.
And finally, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi seems to want to have the Mueller report released in its full, in public, but has held back on the issue of impeachment. In fact, she's even gone as far to say that it's not on the table for her, that it would be a waste of time. And she says Trump isn't even worth it. It would be too divisive. And she's the leader of the Democrats in the House, the one chamber of Congress where the Democrats have any power. So where do you think she stands on this issue of impeachment versus the report? Will she basically want to close the chapter on any kind of impeachment issue as long as she gets to have the Mueller report made public?
Well, first of all, let me say I agree with her and commend her for insisting that the report be made public. In terms of her larger strategy about impeachment, it's been apparent for some time now that her plan was to deflect all discussion of impeachment until this report came out. And I think with the hope, actually, that she would be able to tamp down the movement for impeachment, in part because I think that she thinks that it will help her and her caucus politically in 2020 to be running against Trump, which is, I think, a very dangerous calculation, given what we know about election security and, you know, voting machinery and all the ways in which votes can be suppressed. And I think that leaving Trump unleashed, as you said, for the next 2 years is a very dangerous tactic for society. And I wish that Pelosi and the leadership in both parties would put country over party and stop thinking about how is this going to help or hurt us in a future election and start thinking about what is right for America now.
Ron, give out a website where people can find out more about the work that you do.
Yes, absolutely. It's freespeechforpeople.org.
And we'll link to that from our website. Thank you so much, Ron.
Thank you.
My guest has been Ron Fine, legal director of Free Speech for People and co-author with John Bonifaz and Ben Clements of the book, The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. We've been discussing the end of the Mueller investigation. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.